Well, what do you think? How do I look?
Wait, why are you wearing a tuxedo?
Well, I'm getting ready for the ball.
Wait, what ball?
Well, the Mary D. ball every year.
Yeah, it's December, dude. What do you...
Well, I need time to either lose or gain a little weight. You want to fit perfectly
okay,
into this
I
thing.
See. I see. Well, it looks good.
Can't have it baggy.
Yeah.
Can't have it too...
I get it. No, you look good, man. You look kind of like...
I mean, when I'm busting moves on the dance floor, we don't want to bust out the pants.
True,
you know
true.
What I'm saying?
Yeah, you kind of got like a James Bond thing going almost. Oh, hey, wait a minute. Oh, we're rolling.
All right, let's roll. Well, I'm Rich.
And I'm Mark.
And we are
two guys,
on
Block
Island. What shall we do with Chuck and Sailor? What shall okay, we listeners, want me to do the intro?
Please.
All right, I would love that. Today's guest, I'm very happy she agreed to take some time out of her day. It's none other than Marguerite Donnelly. So, Marguerite, welcome
Marguerite.
To the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. I've been looking forward to it.
Oh, that's good. Excellent. Not everybody says that.
Some people we have to drag in here kicking and screaming.
Yeah, it's not
but,
easy.
You know, it's
you
not
know,
pretty,
it's
but
not,
yeah,
no,
anything but, for the show.
Well, you two are famous, so I'm very honored to be here.
Oh, jeez.
Thank you.
Wow.
World famous on Block Island.
Yeah. I think they call that the big fish in a little pond syndrome, which I'll take,
I
by
can,
the way.
I can,
yes,
yeah,
why
it's
not?
Fine. I'll take it.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to get to chat with you because I don't think you and I have ever actually really met. And I mean, we've met and hello, hi, how are you? But we've never actually chatted. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah.
Me too.
Cool.
Me too.
That's kind of the great thing about this, too. Even there's so many people that you're like, hey, how you doing? But until we actually, you know, I maybe in 30 years have never sat down and talked with them.
Yeah.
You know, like I started thinking about you. I'm like, you know, because we start and we're about to say, please tell us your Block Island story. But you would think that I would know whether you moved here, you were born here. I have no, you know, the background stuff. I just don't even know.
What's your story, Marguerite?
Yeah, what's your story?
Well, gentlemen, it is a very wonderful, happy one.
Good.
I was born in Providence in 1957, but my parents were moved here, actually, in 1957, I was 1958, my parents moved here. They were a young couple in Warwick. My dad was a telephone man. My mom was a nurse. And my dad saw that Block Island needed a telephone man. And it was a very big adventure. He was coming here, they thought, for 6 months so that my dad could get his radio license. And, you know, it was a very big deal. I was just an infant, but it was a very big deal in 1958 to move from Warwick to Block Island.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That was a long ways away back
yes.
then. Yeah.
And especially for my mom's parents, who thought they were really moving to the ends of the earth.
Well, in a way.
Yes.
The ends of New England, anyway.
Yes. Yeah. So they packed up. The four of us, my older siblings, Marianne, Patty, and Michael. So there were four of us. And my parents just totally fell in love with Block Island, even from their initial boat ride. Here they are. They had never been here before. And again, it's almost hard to express what a big adventure. This was like a couple moving, in my grandparents' eyes, they might as well have been going to Australia to the outback to try to, you know, make a life for themselves.
Meanwhile, only colder.
Meanwhile, yes. they're literally like 20 miles.
Yes,
not
exactly.
Even
so
I had a friend whose dad, they lived in Providence, and he went to work in Narragansett, and he actually sent postcards. Because it was way back, and that was a long, you know, you couldn't commute. That was not a daily commute. You got to go down there and work for the week, you know?
Well, it still might be happening in Rhode Island today. It's a Rhode Island thing.
Oh, yeah.
But here they are on their first boat ride, ferry boat ride. It would be the Sprigg Carroll, this young couple who caused quite a stir because not many people were moving here then, with four children. And who was on board but Edrie Dodge and Marilyn Rose? And they immediately, that's Charlie Dodge's mom and Bernice Rose's mom and Cliff, who's in heaven, Danielle Bates's grandmother. And they immediately embraced my mom and dad and held one of us, probably me being the youngest, on their first journey. And it was a love affair all around, forever and ever.
An immediate feeling of that community.
Yes.
The community vibe.
Yes. And as my dad was the first, was the only telephone man at that time, he went on many, you know, house calls and had a chance to meet everyone. And the state took an interest because they learned that mom was a nurse because there was no full-time medical personnel here at the time.
At all.
Now and then.
It was spotty.
Okay. Now and then. So the state reached out to mom, who had taken time off with the four of us, and urged her, pleaded with her, to become the state visiting nurse. And mom agreed. And again, they were only going to be here for 6 months, and the rest is history.
And now,
yeah, where, it was a long 6 months.
I'm assuming your folks were renting a place, or they were provided
did.
With, and where was that, and where did you guys live?
It was a heavenly, wonderful neighborhood. We lived for 10 years at the house right at the top of High Street across from the Atlantic, which Brad and Ann Marthins bought.
Okay, I know the one. Right on the road.
Right on the road.
Cute little porch.
Yep.
Yeah, and Larry Rose lived up in the one for a while behind there.
We actually rented, that was owned by Neil Rose, who is a Larry and Bob's, who was their dad.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense now.
Yes. So I often thought I was raised on the banks of the Continental Pond.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what a beautiful spot.
Heaven. And my mom's dad spent a lot of time with us. My mom we had the most wonderful grandmother in Rosina Shaw, just full of life and love and laughter. And unfortunately, we lost her at an early age when we were little. So Grandpa Shaw came to stay with us quite a bit, and he took on getting up early with me and taking me fishing every morning before school.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. And we were so lucky. We had Edry and Willis and Charlie Dodge as our neighbors. So as Edry and Willis had adopted our family, Grandpa Shaw also felt the same of Charlie. So Charlie would meet us at the pond every morning, and before school, we would go fishing. And my mom was such a good sport, because we would catch a pickerel or a perch, and Grandpa would bring it home in a bucket and keep it in the bathtub until we got home. And then the three of us, me, Charlie, and Grandpa Shaw, we'd go back down to the pond, release the perch after it had a lunch of bologna, which was pretty top shelf. And we're pretty sure we caught that same perch for many, many.
Well, you guys were, it's like, maybe I get a hook in the lip for a minute, but I get that bologna afterwards.
Took one look
and then they put me back. I'll be back by four.
Yeah, I'm gonna bite it again. Yeah. This worked out great.
Yeah.
Wasn't boar's head, but you know, we'll take it.
Yeah,
that's
hilarious. Exactly.
Were those Shaws related to the other Shaws that were out here for a while? Joy and Larry and Dad?
No, okay, not a bit.
Just a similar name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is.
And so then how did your tenure out here become, your dad, how did it become a full-time thing? It was supposed to be 6 months.
Oh, because they just fell in love with the island.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So stay by choice.
Yes.
And so did your dad then continue working as a telephone man out here?
Oh, yes.
He did. Yeah,
lineman and the old-fashioned kind where because we marveled as kids, he strapped on his spikes.
Yeah.
The pole climb.
Yeah.
And would just go up a pole. And mom, again, being such a good sport, we had a wooden porch with a railing. And she would occasionally have to pull us off the porch borrowing daddy's spikes to climb as far as we could.
So if you guys ever like had a kite get stuck in a tree, no problem.
No problem.
Not a worry. Gotcha.
Poor mom would worry, but and it didn't get that bad, but we would try those spikes on anything we could.
That tradition or that style of telephone man continued all the way up until somewhere in Peter Gimp's tenure.
Yes.
That was his nickname, Pete the Pole Climber.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Pete, if you listen and you didn't know that, that was your nickname. Pete the Pole Climber.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some old pictures of the phone lines out here and, you know, just dozens of them. It looked looked like one line per house on each pole. So some of the poles had like 25 lines.
And I know to some, they're in their view shed and to me, they're just beautiful.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
I sitting on Crescent, when you're on the beach, Crescent Beach, and I have my, you know, my spot. I'm not going to tell you where it is. Actually, everyone knows. It's third stairs across Beach Ave.
I thought that was you.
That's me.
There's a third stair? I didn't know that.
And when you're sitting on the beach and you look up and you see the dunes and then you just see the telephone poles and the wires sticking up over. It's just, and some of them are crooked.
Yes.
It's just, it's a cool scene.
Yeah.
It's something.
There's one, from my house, other side of McCormick's house, and just the very, very tip of it. And I've lived here for so many years, and every once in a while I still get caught and think it's a buck, you know, like just the head sticking over because it's just got that shape.
Yep.
And I'm like such a dumb. I'm like, you've looked at that 100 times. It's still a telephone pole.
You know? No. Well, you've got some of the best wires around because the birds gather and they look like musical notes.
Yes.
You have a beautiful...
when they flock up in the fall, especially, and the whole, and then when they all take off, the sound. Yeah. I love the sound. If you're walking and they spook, and you just go, and they're all together, they make a noise.
So then you weren't literally born on Block Island, but you came here as an infant. So is
my home.
Your home, and it's all you know since. I mean, not all you know.
Oh, yes.
But I mean...
Growing up. I grew up here.
Okay. And then, so you went to school and here, and who were some of your buddies that you grew up with?
Yeah, kindergarten through 12th. And our class is still well represented and such a great group. Charlie Dodge, as I mentioned, Lorna Wright, Kim Gaffett, Chris Blaine, Tom Mitchell, and Vicky Carson.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good medley.
Seven, including yourself?
Yeah.
No Hall in there.
Not a Hall.
Well, you must have been
between. But I was sandwiched.
You know, I was going to say, there had a...
And when my parents bought, we have been longtime neighbors of the Halls, and we had a path through the trees. So even though there was no Hall in my class, we saw each other every day because we were two big families, big enough to have a softball game every day after school.
Yeah, or with just the two families.
Yes.
That's great.
Wow. Or to play an even more popular game, chase Marg to give her a noogie.
Noogies, yes.
The noogie.
I was a recipient of many a noogie back in the day.
We all have to take our turn.
Well, I was the shortest guy, so it was kind of like he's the easiest target.
Just gently as you walked by on the head.
Yeah, a little bit. My dad gave a good noogie, too.
Yeah, that's my shout out to Gay Ann Hall. God bless her. She was excellent at it.
Oh, an excellent noogie applier.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Did you work as a kid when you were,
I did. I had the best job because I've always loved reading and books. And I worked for the librarian, Mrs. Sandy Gaffett, at the library, which is now Eli's.
Oh, yeah. Edie Blaine was a guest, and she told us about that and walking down to get books.
And
so you worked there when that was the library.
I worked there when that was the library. I was in the stacks, and there was Mrs. Gaffett, again, the librarian. There were the two of us. And there was a wood-burning stove to keep us warm, but it hardly ever did the trick.
Yeah.
So I felt a little like the first Bob Cratchit working in the stacks and loving books. You know, it was a small collection. So Mrs. Gaffett would say, Marguerite, are you going to read that book again? And I'd say, well, yes, I loved it so much.
What were some of your favorite books?
I really loved all the classics, you know, for kids today. I'm so happy they have Harry Potter. For me, it was Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Hardy Boys.
Were you Nancy a Nancy Drew? Drew?
Nancy Drew, right. Nancy Drew, but also the classics. Dickens. I love Dickens.
Treasure Island.
Not so much a Treasure Island.
Were you an Oliver Twist?
Yeah.
Loved Oliver Twist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Christmas Carol.
That's the go-to. Yes. Yeah.
I was in Oliver Twist, the musical.
Were you?
Yeah. Not on Broadway, just you know, in my Catholic school. And I can still sing the song.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to hear that at some point.
Food, glorious food. We're anxious to try it.
You have a nice little vibrato. I didn't know you were capable of that.
I'll give you more later.
All right. Well, let's talk after the cast.
Okay.
More, please.
Oh, yeah.
More, please. Could I have some more? Yeah. Cool. So the library gig was your main thing? Or?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I was really young at the time.
And then in your teens and early 20s, did you do the summer hustle like we all do now and have like three different jobs and run around and work?
A big joy and fun was working at what was then the State Beach.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I was behind the desk handing out the baskets, and I...
And what were the baskets?
Oh, I'm sorry. The baskets were, you would rent a basket, a small basket, and you would put your belongings in it, and then we'd keep it behind the desk nice and dry and safe.
Gotcha.
And you'd get a little ticket. Like
like a coat check for your stuff.
Yeah. Oh, like a locker with no lock.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. And that sounds like a pretty cush summer job. Hanging out at the beach. Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Wow.
I wonder what the weirdest thing you could put in that basket would be, like come in with like a big box of mozzarella cheese, and you know.
I would think like maybe a couple kids. You stick your kids in the basket and hand them.
Bigger.
We'll be back for these a little later.
Bigger basket.
Yeah, we'll be down there hanging out. Thanks.
You can't do that, sir.
You can't do that. No. No. No checking of the children. Thank you.
So you did that for a few years.
Oh yeah.
So you must have had an island crew on that. Like lifeguards were all island kids, or.
Oh yeah, in the Littlefield family, Chris Littlefield was one of the lifeguards. Paula was the manager. Pam Littlefield was there. And, Pete Swenton. What a classic. Wonderful older gentleman whose house was right up on Fresh Pond.
Okay.
He was in charge of maintenance.
All right. I'm assuming related to John Swenton?
Yes. Pete and Agnes Swenton.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they may have rebuilt the house recently,
yes.
But it's right on the right. It's one of the, it might even be the first one on the right once you pass like the entry to the trails and stuff, right? That's the one? Yeah. Sign out there though for many, many years, the Swintons. So, yeah. And I always wondered if they were related to the other Swintons at Twin Maples, but I don't know.
I believe they are. Pete may have been Mackie's brother.
That would make sense.
But I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
But a lovely.
Nobody ever fact checks what we say as far as people and dates go. So
we make things up all the time.
Absolutely. You just say it like you mean it.
Yep.
We're good.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. No, even if I know someone's wrong, I don't question it. We just go with it. You know?
Go with it.
Yeah.
Go with it. Why not?
Yeah.
So the State Beach. I still have a hard time calling it the Town Beach.
I know.
Do you have that trouble?
I'll slip.
And it was. I think every state building in the state of Rhode Island was painted the same, like greenish.
Green.
Yeah, the greenish.
Green.
I call it Manitou green because it was kind of similar to the color of the Manitou. You know.
Well, Pete was practical. Remember, their house on Fresh Pond was that same. State green.
State
I think
green.
He just used what was left.
Yeah.
And why not?
Yeah. I mean,
why waste?
Yes. No. Frugality. We're frugal New Englanders. You know.
Well, that's what they do with. Maybe I'm not enlightening anyone, but I watched a show about it, and that's what they do now with paint. They actually take all these gallons and gallons, and once they have like 100 gallons, they just mix them all together, and that's the color. But then they sell it for like. $10 a gallon instead of throwing it away.
Wow. Or
so you'll be like, who picked that color for that school? But you know what, it was a tenth the cost because you just went with that off gray.
Wow. Yes, because I'm thinking I did go to Parsons for a bit and got to impress my young nieces and nephews, certified in color so I could really school them with their box of crayons.
Really?
But
when was that?
That would have been in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
But I'm thinking, Rich, that would have just been one big puddle of gray.
It is. That's what they, you know. Wow. And then, so that, but they have to make sure they have enough so that they can give the one color to a big building, like a.
Oh, you know. I gotcha.
And I think now they'll even, they'll ship it, donate it to, you know, Habitat for Humanities and other countries.
Oh, fantastic.
And, you know, so if they're building a hospital in a poorer nation,
yes,
they don't care what color the paint is as long as it's painted and looks neat. So that's what they would do with it. But what a great repurpose, you know?
Yes, yeah. It is.
Yeah.
And when, so after you graduated from the Block Island School, did you go to college?
I went to college and then worked in Boston.
Okay. Where'd you go to school?
I went to Hampshire.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I went to UMass. I'm from Western Mass originally.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to take advantage of the five school
yes, the sister
cooperative
school thing. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was very ambitious.
Okay.
And tried to take a full course load at each school. And did okay, but you know, my dad was already in heaven and mom had my three older siblings in college and even on scholarship.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And three little ones at home, really young. And then me off to college and then three older ones in college, even on scholarship, it was just too much.
Now, Hampshire College is known as kind of a very progressive, liberal, wacky place where the wacky ones go.
Yes.
Were you a free spirit, wacky kind of person? You don't strike me as the typical Hampshire college type. I mean, not.
Well, she is Irish.
Well, that's true. Yeah. You're already wacky enough. Yeah, I'm half Irish, so I get it.
I'm a little ish.
But there was Hampshire as, you know, kind of wild and
it
kooky?
Was.
As it?
Well, it was totally. What was challenging about it, but it sort of fit in. I was okay. I did okay with it. It's not really structured.
Right. You design your own course.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then when you take other courses, I took courses at Amherst and Smith and Mount Holyoke and UMass. That's super structured.
Yeah.
So it was just a great experience. And I remember going to the UMass library.
Oh, yeah.
And 22 stories.
Yes.
And wow, I'd come a long way from our little library.
Walking there, like, Sandy?
Yeah.
Sandy, anyone here?
So, what were you studying at that point? What kind of course were you following?
Just a little bit of everything. And that's something else that Hampshire would allow you to do. Yeah. I took anthropology at Smith, psychology at Amherst, ethnology at Mount Holyoke.
Yeah.
And I think literature,
yeah.
UMass.
Yeah.
So it was a really.
It's a great area too.
Oh, it's
Northampton,
wonderful.
Amherst is really just awesome.
And being a scholarship kid, wow. And my mom was so dear. She wondered and worried a little if I would be self-conscious about being a scholarship kid because Hampshire had a very wealthy clientele.
Yeah.
I mean,
and Amherst.
And Smith and Mount Holyoke.
Yeah.
And I assured her, Mom, I couldn't be prouder than to be from your daughter and daddy's daughter and a Donnelly from Block Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
cool.
I was at when you're meeting kids in the lounge and they were the nicest kids.
Yeah.
But they did say, we're talking about what our dads do or did do. And I said, well, my dad was with the telephone company. And they said, wow, my dad's with the telephone company. He works down by Wall Street.
Yeah.
You know,
he's the vice president.
He's the vice president.
Of AT&T. Yeah.
And I said, well, my dad was a lineman.
Yeah.
And they're like, a lineman. And, you know, and they're the nicest kids, but their reference to the telephone company is their dad is a VP on the 103rd floor.
Marketing and research.
Yes. And I was very proud. I said, my dad actually climbed the poles and fixed the lines and introduced our community to, you know, the joys of a telephone at home.
Yeah.
One thing my dad did, which was really sweet and fun, and this is not taking away at all. I say this with all great respect and affection for the elders, the Islanders I grew up with, because there, you remember, there was a party line back here in those days.
Oh, yeah, we heard about everything. You know.
Wow.
Woo. There is now too. It's just you know.
Can you explain what the party
old
line
pub or the?
Can you explain what the party line is for our listeners who may not know?
Well, when you picked up your phone, and again, you know, I'm 66, so it's not like it was 100 years ago, but you could hear someone else talking. But that's when I was really little. So as you were taught as a polite child, you simply hang up and hope you're not caught listening. But Daddy, the telephone office is just where it is today, right across from the town hall on the hill with the nice Verizon guys.
Okay.
And there was no other place like it on the island when we were growing up. So Daddy would invite the Islanders to the telephone office, and he had a big, big phone book. And he would just say, open that phone book and point. And they would, and it was a phone book of like various parts of the country.
Oh.
Different phone books in the office. And Islanders got such a kick out of it, especially the guys. My dad formed really great friendships with the island guys that he respected and loved and admired so much. Denny Hines was one of his best friends, and he just loved his friends.
And what would they do with the phone book once he'd open it? Well, would they make, would they randomly call
you
someone?
You got me
they
hanging on the edge of my seat.
I know, we're waiting for the punch. The punch
they line. Would, they would just call parts of the country, random people from Block Island, Rhode Island. Like Oklahoma was a big one.
And what would they just say? They'd just say, like, hey, hi, how you doing? We're from Block Island. What's going on in Oklahoma?
And they had, you know, many who were, this was a time when, you know, many of the Islanders, the I grew up with the grandparents of the kids I was lucky enough to grow up with. They were born on the island, and some had never left the island.
Yeah.
So to call a farmer in Oklahoma was pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, the fact that you were live talking to someone.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a real cultural event. You're like exploring a new world through some. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Did sorry.
No, go ahead.
Did he? Oh, did your dad overlap with people like Carnes Dunn? Because he used to do the maintenance up there at the building, or it's, you know, janitorial, clean up the building. And my grandfather, when he was retired, would do it too sometimes. They'd go hang out up there. But I think that might have been a little bit later.
Maybe. Yeah. Daddy's office was a hangout more for the island guys than for us kids.
And that's why I bring up Carnes, because you remember him. He had the office in the back, and, you know, they would hang out. But,
But a great, great, they used to have such fun. You know, a call to Florida was pretty exciting stuff.
Right. And it was expensive back then, like a long distance call. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm assuming they didn't pay for the call because it was they had the thing.
Daddy had like a switchboard or something.
It's really you think about, I mean, these days you want to know something about Oklahoma, you flip open your phone and you get on Wikipedia, you're like, Oklahoma, I can see how the weather is today in Oklahoma. But back then it must have been really exciting.
You could Google zookeepers specializing in monkeys in Oklahoma and you get stuff now. It's crazy, you know, compared to, you never think about that though, to be like excited to be on the phone live with somebody in a different part of the country. Pretty wild.
Super cool.
Simple, you know, simple enough. What's it doing here? We got a tornado coming through. Oh,
really?
It's sunny here. I don't see any tornadoes.
Well, what caused great excitement when we were kids, you know, this is the age of watching Gilligan's Island and the monkeys, and you'd go to school the next day and talk about it. But we Donnelly kids had breaking news because Carol Payne had called the night before all the way from Florida to get Mom's apple pie recipe. And that was the most exciting thing that happened out here. That was our breaking news at school, and every kid was riveted to our story that we actually got a call from Florida.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
It is. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Hey, listen, do you mind if we take a break real quick? Because we have to check in with our sponsors. We actually have people that support this thing we're doing.
Fantastic. So. Who wouldn't? Yes. You guys are fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Well, listeners, we'll be back in just a moment with after these sponsor spots with more of Marguerite.
Rich, what are you doing? Are you okay? Do you have a spasm in your leg or something?
Oh, no, man. I'm practicing my dance moves. I mean, I think this one's called a running man.
I'm not sure what I'd call that. What's with the sudden urge to shake your booty?
Well, I'm going to Captain Nick's tonight, and I want to be ready for the dance floor.
Ah, I love Captain Nick's. It's been Block Island's premier live music venue since it opened in 1976.
Well, my favorite is disco night every Monday night.
Me too. The best part is that everyone gets dressed up in their best 70s attire.
Oh, it is definitely dressed to impress.
And then on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, Captain Nick's features some of the best live entertainment you'll find on Block Island.
And Friday and Saturday night, they feature some of the favorite returning acts like Derek and the Funbags, West End Blend, the Blushing Brides. Love the Blushing Brides. Fever, Neil and the Vipers.
Yeah, and Friday and Saturday afternoons, if you want to get there a little early, Captain Nick's has acoustic entertainment on the deck.
And don't forget Sunday Funday with Young Guns, followed by more great live music inside.
Captain Nick's also has fantastic fun food options going all the way until 1 a.m. You know what that means, late night food.
Yeah. And hey, if you're planning a special event, keep the party going at Nick's by renting out the second floor. It's perfect for wedding after parties, birthday gatherings, but just give them a call and you can reserve that for you and your friends.
Yeah, Captain Nick's also has a great selection of merchandise. You can pick up a cool hat, hoodie, or t-shirt.
Well, I hope to see you and all of our listeners down at Captain Nick's located on Ocean Avenue across from the grocery store.
For a complete entertainment schedule, please visit CaptainNicksBI.com. You know, I'm really looking forward to going fishing, Rich, but I don't know if we're both going to fit in this rowboat.
Wait, are you saying we're going to need a bigger boat?
Yeah, we're definitely going to need a bigger boat.
Hey, well, no problem. Why don't we just call Block Island Fishworks?
Yeah, you know, some of the best fishing in New England is in the waters around Block Island.
Hey, Fishworks is Block Island's number one fishing charter service.
And they have two boats in operation to accommodate your party.
Yeah, they do 3, 4, 6, and 8 hour trips on the Harley for up to 6 people with Captain Hank.
And they do 4 and 6 hour trips on the Jessica Kate with Captain Chris. Now that's for light tackle and fly fishing.
And they target all kinds of species. Bass, bluefish, black sea bass, scup, fluke, bonita, false albacore.
Yeah, and if you need tackle, bait, or some cool Fishworks merchandise, you can stop by the Tackle Shop located on Ocean Ave just past the bridge on the way to New Harbor.
Yeah, get ready to fish with BI Fishworks, but reservations are required for the charters.
But if you just want to fish from the shore, you can head into BI Fishworks and get some information about some of the best fishing spots all around Block Island.
Yeah, so check them out in person, online at bifishworks.com, or give them a call at 401-466-5392.
Let's go catch some fish.
Tons. You know, I was thinking of going out to dinner tonight, but I changed my mind and I'm cooking at home after opening the BI Times and seeing the latest recipe from Pam Gelsomini and Dish Off the Block.
Oh, yeah. I love that column. But you know what? I found out Dish Off the Block isn't only in the Block Island Times. She's got a whole blog at dishofftheblock.com. There you can purchase Pam's new line of Dish Off the Block spices, including Superbly Herbly, Chow Bella, and Ragin' Cajun.
Yeah, not only that, tons of recipes like that Superbly Herbly Striped Bass, apricot ginger sticky ribs over shiitake and leek fried rice. She's got mussels and chorizo, parmesan cream sauce. I mean, those are just a couple of them.
Yeah, and you know what? I've also seen that she has a cookbook out called What Can I Make With This Frickin' Chicken? And it's got 50 tried and true recipes using ingredients commonly found in any kitchen, really. Yeah,
and those meals, I've made a few of them. They are worthy of a 5-star restaurant.
They really are. They're very easy. They're approachable. You know, if you're just a novice chef, sometimes, you know, you get scared away by these big, fancy recipes. Not here. Anyone can make these, and that's what's so cool about them.
Yeah, check her out. Check out Pam, all her stuff. You go to dishofftheblock.com. You can read the blog. You can shop the spice rack. You can purchase the cookbook, or just find something great to make for dinner tonight.
Ooh, now I'm getting hungry.
I'm always hungry.
Hey, Rich.
What's up, Mark?
I want to know where I can learn more about all the magical sea creatures that live in the waters around Block Island.
Oh, well, don't forget about Bimmy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Block Island Maritime Institute. Their motto is learn to love Block Island.
And they have programs for the whole family to explore the history and beauty of Block Island and the Great Salt Pond.
They are located right next to Dead Eyes, and you can go down and check out their 7 aquariums and exploration tanks.
They have daily educational programs for kids, including marine dissections, shellfishing, squidding, crabbing, tying nautical knots, beach and dockside explorations. You can even take a harbor tour.
And Bimia's location and facilities are great for private events. You can have your child's birthday party on site after hours with assistance from the Bimmy Marine educators, or you can rent the Cove Room for private events, including small weddings.
Their amenities include the Cove Room that will accommodate 180 people for a sit-down dinner or 250 for a reception.
And out back, they have a large covered porch and a half acre of lawn that reaches out onto Block Island's Great Salt Pond. And they also have a large commercial kitchen and ice making on site, so you can bring in your own caterers.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's go look at some sea creatures.
And we're back. So thanks for staying with us, listeners, and supporting our sponsors. So we're back with a more great conversation with Marguerite Donnelly. I was thinking, you know, gosh, time is flying. That was just fun stuff to talk about.
A great childhood.
I want to, though, talk about your mom more and, and the, you know, the whole... shenanigans that began.
Yes. With
you know, you spoke of your mom as the state appointed nurse during that window, and then it kind of stuck. So she was the first one to visit when we had a baby. She was the check-in. Like,
yes.
I didn't know anybody was going to come and check on you, but she literally comes up and knocks on the door and says, you know, So we heard, so your mom was Mary Donnelly. And obviously, if you unless you live under a rock somewhere, you've and you haven't heard of the Mary D. Fund. This is who the Mary D. Fund is, and was. We lost her recently, and we miss her terribly. But the legacy carries on.
Yes.
So this is such a great, great all around helpful thing on Block Island. I'd love to delve into a little bit. Now, we had a guest on who was very special to me and I believe Mary, Jack Lynch.
Oh, love Jack Lynch.
And he was just so wonderful to chat with. And he gave us a little brief beginnings of the Mary D. Fund.
Yes.
But maybe you can help us understand a little bit more about how it started. And you know,
I'd be happy to, because it's such a beautiful, poignant story of who we are as a community. Again, mom was the visiting state nurse and often the only medical personnel my childhood. And the only medical center often was our kitchen. So we did see it all. So mom had this love of islanders, our island community, and it was mutual. And it was a time when... and it's still true today, when people were in need of more than just medical help. You know, they had trouble, there'd be trouble paying an oil bill or an electric bill or a medical bill. And mom took it upon herself to help with that too. And that was recognized, noticed by others who put together really this with mom, really this bold, brave experiment in the best of who we are, of faith, hope, and love. Faith in our ability to love thy neighbor, help a stranger, and again, have faith in each other and God. Because my mom, and like me, we are people of faith, great faith, as Jack Lynch was and so many more. But when you think of it, and we have generational proof of its success.
Oh, yeah.
Because those who, you know, I always say about the Mary D. Fund, love matters, kindness counts, and compassion works. And the very people that are need help turn when they're given that opportunity to just get themselves back on their feet, they are the ones who continue the Mary D. Fund by giving themselves. So it's this beautiful, belief in the best of who we are when it comes to helping each other. Because there's always that profound question, you know, what are we here for? What do we do with the time we're given? And the Mary D. Fund remains just this poignant expression of the best we can be to each other, for each other. And it's an honor to carry it on for Mom.
Yeah. So when, what year was it actually established to where it was like
here? 1977, 78.
Okay. All right. But again, your mom had been helping people out in above and beyond her role as the nurse in many ways.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
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 And did it sort of start as a group of people that you could reach out to and say, hey, you know, our neighbor needs a hand. Can we all pitch in $5 and help?
Well, it actually started because we are a very ecumenical island. It actually started in the churches. And they knew that Mom had a personal relationship and knowledge of those in need. So they chose Mom to represent them and in giving the help. You know, Mom always says, still does in heaven, our donors are the Mary D. Fund. And the ball is our night to celebrate all the wonderful things we can do thanks to our donors, because, you know, it's such a privilege for me to carry it on and a great responsibility, because I'm the steward of the donors and I look out for the donors every bit as much and consider their donations as I help others. Because, and you know, first and foremost, as Mom taught me, as I went on, you know, what a privilege it was as a kid, being the youngest. I am going backing up a little, but I've been at this with Mom for a long time. Being the youngest, I went on house calls with Mom. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So, the very people that I saw as a child, I was later, you know, formed a great respect and friendships with, and later even was able to help some of them with Mom through the Mary D. Fund. And what I learned from Mom is, and first and foremost, we respect the dignity of those who need help. And we do it in a compassionate way. And we always start with a hug and we end with a smile and a laugh. Because, you know, when someone reaches out to you for help, it doesn't make your head big. But, you know, it's such a poignant, beautiful way to help each other. And if someone... And it's all about trust and faith in each other, because they know they can come to me for help and I'm going to do the best I can and give them the respect they deserve. And it doesn't, you know, when someone reaches out to you for help, it doesn't make your head big. It doesn't fill you, make you full of yourself. It's actually a very humbling experience.
I would agree, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
it's a very humbling experience and a very poignant one. And we are still, and I love this most about us as a community, we are still the land of the wink and the nod.
Mm. I'm getting a lot of great quotes here.
Yeah, the land. Yes.
And I love the start with a hug and end with a smile.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would like to do every day like that.
Well, yeah. I'm very privileged.
I'll be over in the morning.
Perfect. But when I say we're the land of the wink and the nod, where...
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an expression I use quite a bit.
We literally just winked and nodded at each other. Yes, yes, okay.
We could be in line at the post office right now. Going,
oh, yeah.
You know, yes. And I think that for me, the wink and nod is because we're such a small, tight community, the year round population. And I was talking to someone about it, and, you know, I said, you know, it's you go to the grocery store and you see the person who just lost someone, a parent or a loved one or someone. And, you know, so often I won't say anything, but as I go by, I just touch the shoulder.
Yes.
And that's all I just give them the nod, and you know, that just to me, I'm letting you know, I love you. We don't need to talk about it, especially not here over the, you know, bologna that someone's picking up for their fish. but you know, but at the deli counter.
By the way, you did say the year round community. I should say, I mean, I understand the wink and the nod too. I don't live here year round.
Okay? I understand.
All right. Mark.
The, integrate. Yeah. No, it's more than year round. So I apologize.
I'm
for that.
Kidding.
Yeah, 'cause there's the carpetbaggers too. We,
right.
There are people
carpetbaggers kind of get it.
But, you know, I'm going to say, because this is, I feel, so important. You know, we have a scholarship, and I have the pleasure of giving it out at school every year at graduation. And this year at graduation, I'm looking out on this beautiful sea of people, and Mom was also the school nurse forever. That's why I started school at a very young age. I was Gertrude Ball. Some classroom aide at the age of like 2. That's Mike O'Brien's grandmother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and Mom was right there as the school nurse, or Edrian Willis, Edry, and Marilyn down in the cafeteria would take care of me while Mom was on a house call. And Mom being new, she would get the directions to the house from Edry and Marilyn. And they'd say, oh, leave Marguerite with us. So I've started school at a very young age. So as I'm looking out, and our scholarship, which is not confidential, everything else is, but our scholarship is based on academics and the commitment of the student to give back to their community. And it is in our DNA out here to give back and to care for each other. And I know the science of DNA, so the kids can also thank their parents for their good looks and everything else.
Well,
but it's at this graduation, because I think it's important as people are moving here, as my parents moved here, I'm looking out and I see Adrian Mitchell. Well, Mom's first day of school, as a school nurse, a student asked her to help him with his graduation speech in her office, and it was Adrian Mitchell. And then the superintendent asked a student at school to show Mom around as the new school nurse, and that was Ellen O'Brien, whose son, Mike O'Brien, of course, teaches at the school in the Sullivan House with Rosalie and Sean Kivlahan, hosts the Mary D. Ball. But I want everyone to know, even if you're new to the island, you've decided to try us and make a commitment to us as a community, that they are already part of our story. We're not on Settlers Rock. You don't have to go back generations to be really part of our community. So I think that's important. And because also, too, the Mary D. Fund, our donors were one big Mary D. They are from all over. I still get calls from other communities. How do they have a Mary D. Fund? Because it is seen as such a beautiful blueprint to help each other. Many like that the government, that it doesn't involve lots of red tape and the government. It's neighbor helping neighbor. Again, the basics. Love thy neighbor, help a stranger, and have faith in each other. And I do, why we get still national attention is thanks to Sue Hagedorn and her daughter Hope Davis. Sue did the film Island Nurse for PBS, for Rhode Island PBS.
Yep.
And then Hope wrote the article about Mom in the New York Times magazine section. And Mom being Mom, because Mom always did, we knew seeing the New York Times with Mom was not unusual because she loved crossword puzzles and she would do the crossword puzzle. And one Saturday night, Mom said to us, "Oh, that's right. I'm going to be in the New York Times magazine tomorrow."
Just casually.
Oh, you know.
Yeah.
And we said,
"Oh, by the way."
By the way.
Yeah. And we said, "You are?" And she said, "Yes, Hope, Sue's daughter, wrote an article about me." And we said, "Wow, that's exciting." And it, like at that moment, the phone started to ring, and that's Saturday, because the major media news outlets often look to the New York Times. They get a preview of human interest stories. And as Mom is just telling us that, ABC calls and Good Morning America calls, NBC, the Today Show calls, Making a Difference with Brian Williams calls, oh, and CBS.
That's it.
With Bill Geist. Yeah. So, and this is a nice, this is how the island still is. It's such a personal place. And again, our numbers have grown and it still is personal, I feel. Because we try and we, you know, people who move here, they should know resistance is futile because we're always going to be as friendly, as chatty, you know, gesturing as I am right now.
Sooner or later, we're going to get you.
We're going to get you.
We're going to get your hug. You hear me?
Exactly. Yeah,
it's coming.
Yes, it's coming.
Sure, we understand you're a hardened New Yorker who's been living in Manhattan your whole life, but we're gonna hug you.
We're going to hug you.
Yeah.
And hold on tight.
Yes.
So my mom is, because this is a sweet island story, so Mom is going to be on CBS Sunday Morning, which was really a beautiful segment.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was lovely.
So good, yeah.
And Mom was mic'd for 3 days. Wow. 3 days. Wow. My sister Kath, God bless her, we miss her and love her every day. She's in heaven. But she and my niece Riley were going to come here just to watch the segment with us on TV.
Yeah.
So they're on the boat. It's cutting it close. And here's Bill McComb, who says, "Kath, don't worry." Backs his truck right up to the boat, says, "Wait, everybody." And Kath and Riley run off the boat. And everyone's like, understanding and smiling and applauding. And they jump in the back of Bill's truck. They don't even bother getting in. They just jump in the back. And Bill brings them right up the driveway to see Mom.
And they made it in time?
They made it
all
in
right.
time. Wow. Isn't that a great story?
It is.
That is.
And I'm going to, if I may, tell you a Bill Geist story, who was so nice. Such a one. And Willie Geist is on, the Today Show and everything. So he had read in the New York Times about an 85-year-old nurse who also administers her fund. And he thought, what a great human interest story. But when I met with his producer, and Bill Geist, he was so wonderful. But he sort of said, the producer said, "Wow, what a hoot, an 85-year-old nurse." And first and foremost, it's my mom. So I said, "Well, wait a minute now." Mom wasn't there. I said, "Well, wait a minute. I want you to know that's my mom. And I'm sure this story is going to be done with respect." And they said, "Oh, yeah. But an 85-year-old nurse." And I said, "Well, I think when you see Mom's story and meet our community, you may have a different take on this." And Bill Geist later, again, after spending 3 days, full days, and one of the parts they loved the most, Mom is going on a house call with them. And along the side of the road, and I'm driving with Mom, along the side of the road, there is our beloved Roberta Kloster with Kira, who's just a baby, in the car seat, and Birdie is having car trouble. So Mom says, we got to pull over. And the crew's like, we got to pull over. And Mom's yeah. like, we got to pull over. And then they're like, of course we'll pull over. And Mom gets Birdie and Kira in the car seat, and takes them to the medical center where they're weighed by, where Kira's having a checkup with her grandmother, Linda. But Mom was also doing the checkup. And they said later that riding all jam-packed in the car with Roberta and the baby was one of the best moments they've ever had. And Bill Geis said to me later, he said, Marguerite, you're right. This was one of the most beautiful stories I've ever covered.
Yeah.
He said, it's a very different thing than I thought it would be.
Yeah. You know... just another person touched by your mom and your family.
Yeah. That moment, they got it.
Yeah.
The Block Island moment.
They got the moment.
It's the thing. They got it.
They got it. Yeah. And then they said, can we all live with you? And we said, sure, sure.
That was their aha moment.
Yes. And it's every bit about our, as much about our community. You know, this bold, really bold experiment of the Mary D. Fund only worked and continues to work because of our belief, of the belief of our donors, that it is a great way, a blueprint, a map, a vehicle to help others. And it's such a beautiful thing.
Now, when did the Mary D. Ball begin? When was the first year of the Mary D. Ball?
Well, it's we're on our 27th ball, and
coming up this next one,
I think it's the 30th.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
I believe it's the 30th.
Okay. If you believe it, I believe it.
Yeah, like we said, you can just make things.
And listeners, believe it.
Believe it. It's true. So, so it started 30 years ago.
Yes.
And where was it held the first time?
It was at the Narragansett.
Okay.
I believe under a tent. Where the Donnelly family and the committee outnumbered the guests. And look how we've grown.
Right. It has literally become and of course, again, at the root of it all is the cause. It has kind of turned into like quite the affair.
It's
amazing.
That was Mom's hope, because Mom always loved kids and the school kids and teenagers, and always had a great relationship with them. And, you know, Mom decided early on with the ball to try to make it a family event where everyone could afford to go. We had the most unbelievable ticket price for the longest time. It was a standard $40 to get into the Mary D. Ball, to make sure that that families could afford to go.
Right. It's not like you're charging like a $500 a plate fundraiser kind of thing. Dinner.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But those plates are welcome.
They are, certainly. Yes, certainly, by all means.
Pay whatever you would like for your seat.
Yes. Yes.
So for Mom, for it to become an event for families just meant everything. And now with our supporters and the success of the Mary D. Fund in helping others, people now from away, and isn't there something charming about us being able to say people from away?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I mean, for as an island kid all grown up, it's always been, you know, people from away. But
I am learning so many new terms.
People from away.
I like it.
What do we have so far? We have people from away. We have the land of the wink and the nod.
Yep.
There's one other one that was
starts
really,
with a hug and ends
starts with a hug and ends
smile.
With a smile.
Yeah. Now, should I copyright those?
I would at least
you know, coin them.
Yeah,
officially
them.
Consider
officially
those coined.
They're officially coined.
Yeah.
All right.
But now we've got families who plan their summer vacations around the Mary D. Ball.
Wow.
And I had a, because Mom got the most poignant, beautiful letters from families from away, New Jersey, L.A., who were coming east, but they said, and New York, that the Mary D. Ball is the only event that their teenagers and 20-somethings insist their parents go with them. And it becomes this family celebration.
Wow, that's rare.
Isn't that fantastic?
It is. It's great.
And the parents are so grateful.
Wow. Can I ask, did you see, because of all the attention from the New York Times article and, the, and the pieces on television, did you receive donations randomly from around, from away?
Yes. From away, from all over.
From all over.
In a very touching way. And one thing, you know, having done the Mary D. Fund with Mom for many years, which was such a privilege to be by her side and now continuing it. But every donation we get is treated with the same joy and respect, because if someone gives you $1,000, wow.
$50 or $50,000.
Yes.
It's all treated.
It's all treated because the person giving $15, that's, as you know, perhaps for their situation, that's a huge donation.
Yeah.
So, but Mom did receive the poor post office, who we love so much. But Mom really received, like, no kidding, like a sack of mail.
Wow.
From all over and from all walks of life. It resonated, Mom's story, because we have poignant letters, especially from the Midwest, where families, farmers who lived through the Depression only learned later, or they're still practicing this today, they only learned that their grandmother was providing food, groceries for the family down the road, and or their grandfather did the same, and or their parents, you know, was providing helping Santa at Christmas with, you know, other families. And we also had, this is a beautiful story, and veterans, many, many veterans, because Mom was a quite a peace activist, a dear friend of Daniel Berrigan's. And Mom was a big supporter of the military in that she didn't want anyone put in harm's way for an unjust cause, or but a very a big peace activist, and is respected as one. So veterans reached out to Mom, many, many letters saying, "Mary, this is the best in our country, that you are helping others in this way." So that was very touching. And Mom actually received from a veteran's, a young soldier's family, from the dad, a flag. He had lost his son in combat. And he was so touched by the Bill Geis story on CBS, or the Making a Difference on NBC. Unbelievably, he sent the flag that flew over their state capital when their son was killed in combat to Mom in honor of Mom.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that beautiful?
That's amazing. But I mean,
it is that vibe.
It is.
You know, and I mean, you can't escape, you know, the hug and the smile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can I just tell you one more story, because it shows you,
of course,
the depth of, you know, Mom's story and the story of our community, from sea to shining sea, small towns, big cities. One, a global philanthropist, flew us out to LA, and when Mom walked in and the two of us walked in her office high above LA, this global philanthropist went, "Mama," and embraced Mom and said, "You are my role model."
Aww.
And also to this beauty, and you're as touched by the farmer and the veteran who says it means so much what we're able to do with the Mary D. Fund. And then this letter from a mom from the Upper East Side, Upper West Side of New York City, who recently was divorced from her very successful family, from her very successful husband. And it's just the mom now and the teenage son at home in their apartment in New York City. And she reaches out to mom to say, you know, due to the divorce, the son had was so upset about their parents breaking up and being a teenager, early, you know, late teens, early 20s, he had nothing to say to his mom. Nothing. And by chance, they were sitting together on Sunday morning and watched CBS Sunday Morning, and the Bill Geist episode came on with mom. And he watched it, and afterwards, he looked at his mom and said, I get it. I get it. And what he did was he then went to his local parish and he began to volunteer. And then he asked his mom to join him. And he said, this is just so beautiful because this mom is writing and she said, Mary, you have done so much for so many. For me, you gave me back my son.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Isn't that beautiful?
And have, they have no connection to Block Island whatsoever.
No connection. And but he's still, they're still at it. They're still volunteering.
Wow.
Isn't that so beautiful?
It's amazing.
You know, I think the way I always felt was Mary was one of those people that wanted to make you be a better person.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, but
to be the best you could
to
be.
To be the best you could right. be, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah. to give you that opportunity.
I'm still trying.
Oh, we all are.
yeah.
yeah I still have a ways to go.
Yes. You'll get there. Yes. Just hey, keep yeah. going.
I keep
go
plugging
to,
away.
I go to morning mass every day with the hopes of I can just continue and be a better person and get it right. And but one more story, if I may, because it shows the power of the Mary D. Fund and the kindness, what kindness and compassion can do. So mom also got letters from prisons who prisoners saw the segments on mom on the news. And one letter was so amazing. He wasn't asking for forgiveness. He wasn't this prisoner. He wasn't asking for money. He wasn't asking for or making excuses for himself. He said, Mary, I saw your story and I wish I had been a better person. But I am going to try. I am going to be a better person today because of you yeah. in prison. So,
and I think wow. That's the big one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. If you can be a person that makes other people want to do better and be better,
yeah.
that's not an easy achievement.
Yeah.
Can I do one thing? Because I'm so afraid we're going to forget this part.
Do it.
So please. Some of our listeners may have never donated, may want to, but may not know how. So obviously we're not trying to reach people that already know about the Mary D.
Fund. Oh, yes.
So is it as simple as just mailing a check?
It is. And they just write it out to the Mary D. Fund.
Yep.
P.O. Box 323, Block Island, Rhode Island. And they will get a thank you and an acknowledgement with our tax ID number. It's a charitable donation. And what's we're very proud of, every penny goes to helping others because we have no administrative costs. And why is that? Because I remain the longest, oldest, proudest unpaid intern on the planet.
Well, yeah. God bless you for that, boy, I'll tell you. But the payment is it must feel good.
You know,
not a big head good, but just good that you're able to take the reins and
yes, it's
captain this through the next story.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Because it is a great responsibility, and you really have to be smart, because I'm the steward of the donors. Giving takes intelligence and strength, because you're going to help this person in a way they may not have even seen coming. You know, writing of the checks is the least of it. That gets them on their feet. And then we, like Grandpa Shaw, we teach them how to fish.
You right. follow up yeah. with them. Yes. You stay yeah. in touch with them.
We stay in touch.
You check in on them.
And they're sure. so yeah. proud, because maybe, you know, for the cynical, perhaps day one, we're giving them a fish. Well, day two, we teach them how to fish. And we have this wonderful connection and relationship, because we're partners. We're partners, because if you look at the person you're helping as anything but your equal and your partner, then you're missing the point, because you're partnering with them to get them through this so that they can be the best person they can be. And I'll check in and say, well, how's it going? And they'll say, Marjorie, I'm very happy to say I'm all set. In fact, I'm just made a donation to the Mary D. Fund.
Yeah, I've been down the circle. I think I may have told a story already in another episode, but we lost our business to a plane crash, and I never asked for anything, and a check showed up in the mail, and I actually felt I felt bad, because I called your mom, and I said, listen, I appreciate this, and we don't. You know, it's very, very helpful. But I had bought a trip for a couple of nights away. And I said, I feel absolutely horrible taking a donation and going. I just felt really guilty about yep. it. She wiped it away. She said, that was already planned, and you really need that. And yes. you deserve it. And this isn't to, you know, make you feel like, oh, I can't accept the help. And then, you know, I was a seed.
Yes.
And now I try to help and donate yes. time, and maybe make a donation when I can. And then yeah. that's the great thing is,
isn't people, it great?
The people that you do help, you know, you feel, it feels really good when they come about and now they're helping others.
Yes.
You know, that's a great circle.
That's why, you know, foundations marvel, big foundations marvel at our rate of success, you know, and we're not, we do, through our donors, we do just help somebody just get back on their feet. Because as I always say when I meet with somebody, who doesn't need help now and then?
That's right.
Yeah, you right. never know. Mm-hmm. Yes. So.
Well, and the other thing is that, not to be a complete cynic or anything, yeah. but philanthropy generally, it's kind of a trendy thing to do these days.
Yes.
And there are some, you know, some fundraisers, some movements, some causes that, in my opinion, seem to be a little more about the people that are putting on the fundraisers in these yes. events than the actual reason for yeah. it. And it's, you know, it's more of a dog and pony show. And that's not to say that the money doesn't go to help people.
Oh, yes.
And it's great that it does.
Yes.
But this is kind of the epitome of, like, it's like that the essence, it's distilled down into its purest form of what philanthropy is supposed to be, you know.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Yeah. I believe that, because we're yeah. low key, but boy, do we get things done.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Our
yeah.
portfolio is so yeah. beautiful. You know, like, there are many days I'll think when I'm in the middle of, and then I have another busy Mary D. Fund today, a day today. And I'll think, wow, okay, if just helping this one person is enough, but lo and behold, then that person becomes part of the story, and another person is helped. And the Mary D. Fund, when I say we have a beautiful portfolio, it's amazing, the lives. And we've given, you know, we're not only in the business of second chances. we are in the business of third, fourth, and fifth until that person can get it right. And it's not always, you know, it wasn't always easy being Mary D, because when you champion those who are in need, that can make the cynical really angry.
Sure, sure.
Really angry. And we saw it in this kid's, you know, mom could be criticized and, you know, she'd say, oh, don't you worry about that. And we would show off our catechism because Gertrude Ball was my catechism teacher. And we'd say as the little kids, we'd say, mommy, we're turning the other cheek, but we're running out of cheeks. And we and we counted each kid as four cheeks, and there were seven of us. So that's a lot of cheeks.
That's a lot of cheeks. Yeah, yeah. Write that one down, too. That's a good one.
So, you know, what's important to note, too, the good that can be done, even in the face, we're no Pollyannas. Mom had all the joys and sorrows of life, and just kept at it. You know, as good as mom seemed, she was even better. I mean, great heartbreak. And, you know, not easy being a young widow, seven kids, this job which was caring for an island.
Well, and just being a nurse,
yes,
in and of itself is,
yeah,
you know, can be a heart-wrenching, oh, job on its worst days.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes on its medium days, it's, yeah, really tough still.
Yeah.
So, I think in a way she rewrote the job description.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right.
Well, she is considered, you know, mom was very modest, but super smart, and she is considered by the state of Rhode Island to be a pioneer in public health. Mom was doing things before anybody else was. So, and you know what was very touching is I'm at her office at the medical center. I opened this little box, and it's from a long time ago. And here's mom working all by herself as a nurse and acting as a doctor with the rescue squad, not as a doctor, but in lieu of a doctor. And mom is keeping these impeccable notes as if she's going to be meeting with a team. And here she is all by herself, but keeping the same notes as a professional, as if there's someone that she can.
Right. She's going to brief somebody on,
yes,
this. Say a team of, yeah, squad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or, right, or have,
yeah,
or rely on to. Yeah. So I thought that was so poignant.
I could just see her being like, well, what if something happens to me tomorrow? How will they know,
yes,
where things,
right,
are at?
Right.
Like,
right.
They'll,
right,
just have to look in my books,
yeah,
and they'll know. And so leave me alone. And I'm doing it this. Oh, this,
yeah,
is the way it should be done. And,
yes,
that's that.
What an amazing woman. I mean, has she been, is she up for a sainthood? Is it possible? Can we saint, can she be, you know, not, how do you become a saint? Can we make her a saint?
Mark, this
can
is
we do this?
Really sweet. When I was at, coming out of Mass, there was a woman who kept sort of sneaking a peek at me, and she said, excuse me, are you Marguerite Donnelly? And I said, well, that depends, and that made her laugh.
I have the same line when people are, are you Mark? Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she told me this very sweet story that she is a tour guide from New Jersey, and that on the bus ride to Point Judith, her tour guide watches Island Nurse on the bus to get in the proper mood, headset to come, mindset to come to the island. And then they go to Mom's Park, and then they go to Mass. And they have a great time, too. But, you know, that's how people are affected by Mom's story, which is really a story that all our moms, you know, we are the product of loving, caring families. And through mom became the vessel for this wonderful act of kindness and caring, which works.
Yeah.
Compassion works.
Wow. What an amazing, amazing legacy. And thank you for continuing for, and carrying the weight of it.
Being the longest unpaid intern. Yeah.
Woohoo!
I could talk about this forever. And
I could as well, but I guess it's getting near that time.
Kind of getting close. Yeah.
Yes, right. So, I would imagine.
Did you say it before? What's the P.O. box?
323.
Okay. So Mary D. Fund donations, write it right out to the Mary D. Fund. Mail a check to 323.
323.
P.O. Box 323 on Block Island.
And the zip code is 02807. Forgot to include
it. It is 02807.
Yes. Right. Or if you forget to write it down, you can always email us, right, Rich?
Yeah. Email away. Our email is twoguysonbi@gmail.com. And not only questions about the Mary D. Fund, but you can email us anything, suggestions, comments about our podcast, whatever you'd like.
Yeah. And if you want to get in touch with us or follow us on social media, please do so on Facebook and Instagram. And wherever you listen to the podcast, please hit the subscribe button. And most importantly, just tell your friends.
Yeah.
Right.
We love friends.
Yeah.
And
I'm glad to have made another friend today.
Yeah,
this actually is finally fantastic. We get to
I
hang out
how
with
little
you.
I didn't know you.
Again, in passing.
Of course.
I DJ'd the Mary D. Ball a couple years and worked in. Yeah. We'd met and said hello, but, you know, busy. But it's nice to spend some time
and
with
you. And I heard you're finally invited back this time.
Yes. Well, yeah, you know, So
but, Mark, I get shy around celebrities. And,
Well, yeah. then you must not be very shy right now. You must be feeling very confident, so that's good.
We have dreams, no promises, but we have dreams of bringing our setup to the ball one year.
We would love that.
And just having people come and sit down and chat with us.
We would love that.
We were going to try and do it this past season, but I was out. I was off.
Yes. Conflicting schedule.
Yes.
But
yes.
Maybe this year. You never know.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Love to have the guests sit down and chat with us.
Speaking of being, you know, joke about celebrities, but we did go.
We went the year before we were together.
2021. Yeah. 21, 20, what year is it? I forget. Anyway, whatever.
It was.
2 years. Yeah, 22 we went together.
Yes.
And it was really weird. It was like the podcast had just kind of started bubbling up and people were like, hey, can we get our picture with you? And
it was like,
we're kidding. Like, whoa, what's happening?
You two will dress up the place.
And obviously, as you know, anything we can do to support and help spread the word will
we
happy.
We try to announce everything. Yeah. And, you know.
So, yes, you're so good, you two.
Well, we love you.
Not as good as you.
Thank you.
But, you know.
Oh, sure.
Well, listen, thank you once again for taking time out
thank
of your day.
Thank you, gentlemen.
For us. And this was really a very lovely, enlightening, fun time.
Thank you.
Just, I'm touched. It was very touching.
Me too.
Very good. Very
I'm going to excuse myself and go have a little cry in the other room for
well,
a second.
Well, I can't because I'm getting right back to work on the Mary D. Fund.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
All right. Well,
God bless you too. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you. And God bless you as well.
We'll see you next week or in a couple weeks. Next episode, we'll see you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Thanks, listeners. See ya. Hey, Rich.
Yes, Mark.
Can you give me a ride down to the grocery store?
Why? What do you need?
I got to get some bologna. And you have a bathtub at your house, right?
Mark.
Can I borrow the bathtub? And a fishing pole.
Do you remember what happened last time?
It
still smells bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. Oh, and one last thing. Whether you're a local or just visiting Block Island, pick up a copy of the Block Island Guide. Published annually for the last 35 years, it features 120 pages full of killer photos and all the details you need to know. Most importantly, it's fun to read.
What shall we do with the drunken sailor? What shall we do with the drunken sailor? What shall we do with the drunken sailor?